Hi, everyone. So we are at a really amazing part of the program now because we're going to have an opportunity to hear some really amazing speakers and we're going to have some discussion. So as Kazi said, get your thinking caps on. I'm going to introduce all four speakers at the beginning, and if you could welcome them as they come up, that would be great. I just want to make sure we've got everybody here. Okay, great. The first speaker I'm going to be introducing is Luis Rosa. He's a Puerto Rican independentista and a former prisoner of war who spent 19 years in prison for fighting U.S. colonialism in Puerto Rico. And he is a member of the Human Rights Committee of Puerto Rico to Free Political Prisoners. Let's give him a really big round of applause. He came all the way from Puerto Rico for this event. Next person I'd like to introduce is Fred Hampton Jr. He is a former political prisoner and chairman of the Prisoners of Conscience Committee and the Free Aaron Patterson Defense Committee. He is the son of Chairman Fred Hampton and Akua and Jerry. Please give him a warm round of applause. To be someone who fights in the struggle, we need real attorneys that really fight for social justice. They are hard to come by. They are rare. We have one with us here tonight. Her name is Sophia Elijah. She is an attorney and deputy director of the Criminal Justice Institute at Harvard Law School. She has and continues to represent Marilyn Buck and Sundiata Okoli and many other political prisoners. She has written, and she represented Carol Hill as well. She has written extensively about the criminal justice system and the prison industrial complex. Let's give it up for her once again. We started with former political prisoner Kazi Touré, national co-chair of the Jericho Movement, and he will now take his seat as well. Please give a warm round of applause to Kazi Touré. So what we'd like to do is, we said that this was going to be a discussion, and we would like to actually benefit from the experience and wisdom of the people here tonight, and we'd like to give them all a chance to talk with us, but we also want to allow people the opportunity to ask questions, and you can actually ask your questions at the end. If you feel like it's really critical to ask during when the person is talking, please do that as well. We want this an opportunity to be for us to learn from people that have fought in the struggle so that we can carry on their struggle. So I'm going to start with Luis Rosa.
Thank you. I hope you don't mind if I speak from sitting down. It doesn't make that much of a difference because I'm not that tall anymore. I want to thank the organizers, and I want to thank each and one of you present today. It's extremely inspiring, motivating to see so many young faces. Usually what I see in Puerto Rico is a lot of old heads, and that's cool, but we need young blood. We need a fresh blood. Fresh ideas, and that's what y'all bring to this. So I'm very grateful for that. I'm very honored to be here. Tom Manning, Marilyn Buck, Oscar Lopez Rivera, Yang Laman, they don't need to be free. They don't need for us to free them. They've been free from the minute they started to struggle, from the minute they started to care for their neighbors, to care for others, from the minute they started to fight apartheid, fight Puerto Rican colonialism, fight every type of injustice in the communities, they've been free. What they yearn for, what they want, what they need, what they get motivated and enriched from is our freedom out here. For us not to be killing each other, for us not to be involved in the destruction of a community, for us to be involved in the liberation of humanity, not only our nations, but all those other nations that connect us, that makes us one. That struggle in Canada is as much our struggle here as it is theirs. That struggle in Venezuela is as much ours as it is theirs. And therefore, we can also share the victories. We're seeing throughout Latin America a whole change, a left-wing swift. That domino theory that they were afraid of in the 50s and the 40s is happening today, and it's going to sweep through all this. And if you look at each one of those movements, it's young people. I've traveled through Venezuela, and the people on the streets, the people doing the work, the people who got Chavez out of jail after the coup, was young people who took to the streets, who commandeered the radios and TV stations, who took up arms. That's what's needed. And that's what's needed to rescue our community from gentrification, from all the other abuses that we face, because we are internal colonies of the United States, and we have to find a way to liberate ourselves and not expect that a democratic government or government under the Democrats is going to free us, because they ride the same boat as Republicans. We're not going to expect for our ballots to be counted when for years they've been miscounted or swept under a table or forgotten. So we're going to have to do it our way. We're going to have to do it the way that has worked throughout other countries, the way that has worked through our, because we have good examples of things that work. The Black Panther Party gave us a legacy, gave us great teachings. We have to build up on that. We have to build up on all those examples that were left there, that are still there. And this art exhibit of Tom Manning speaks to that, because when you look at those colors, when you look at a man who suffered not only incarceration, but, you know, Tom Manning was picked up and dropped, and his hip was broken by police officers. He was tortured in every which way. Everything that you see and read about Belgrade in Iraq have been practiced on our political prisoners and our regular brothers and sisters who are in within these penitentiaries. As a matter of fact, those jailers over there came from here. Those are the same jailers we face in the federal system who are on the National Guard and decide to go over there and do a tour of duty. So, you know, that's what we face. And to see that throughout this, there's resistance, because there's been political prisoners from day one. From the day that the colonizers came here and came there, there's been political prisoners because there's been people willing to resist. So the idea of having political prisoners, the idea of having dozens of or hundreds of political prisoners in the United States is not new to people who struggle. They've always been there. We just got to not unearth them, because that's not the right term, but we have to bring them to light and we have to make them heard. And Tom Manning is doing that through his paintings. He's speaking to us. He's expressing a process of liberation, because that's what art has become to him. That's what art has become to Oscar Lopez and Carlos Alberto, two of my comrades who have been in 27 and 26 years. And we're talking about comrades who the average amount of time that these political prisoners have there is 25 years, average. You know, a lot of you weren't even born then. A lot of the programs that you benefit in universities have been a result of their struggle back in the 60s and 70s. A lot of things that we benefit from. These are the things that we have to protect today, cost what it may cost. So I leave you with that message that in terms of crisis, and a lot of people, I know in Puerto Rico, when we were trying to get the campaign started again after we were released in 99, it was kind of hard because people said, well, with Bush in power, things are going to be different. Look, we've operated this Patriot Act. It's nothing new. It's COINTELPRO with another name. And before COINTELPRO was with the McCarthy, every communist, there was a communist under everybody's bed. it's nothing new. We've been doing it. We've operated best under pressure. We've operated best in crisis. And sometimes it's best for us to create that crisis and make it bigger for us to operate. And so we need to not fear these things. We need to confront them. We need to confront those shootings in New York. We need to confront that shooting in that sister down in the South. We need to confront all that and forget about if there's a Patriot Act or whatever. We need to do our job. They're doing theirs. And theirs is to continue to colonize and oppress us, to eliminate us. We have to do ours. And that's to survive at any cost. Thank you.
Right on. Power to the people. Right on. When I was here, first of all, let me say it's an honor to be on this panel. It's an honor to be amongst you also. When I was held captive a little bit under 9 years in just about every concentration camp in the state of Illinois, there were a number of different legends that we heard about, living legends and past legends that helped give us inspiration to keep moving. And Rose, your name rang loud and clear through places like Menard and Stateville, which we call Deathville. So just in reference, you saying, little guy that made big moves. Right on. Right on. Yesterday marked the 37th year after the assassinations of Deputy Chairman Fred Hampton and Defense Captain Mark Clark, the day in which we define as one of the most brutal acts of terrorism to ever occur on U.S. soil. And when we speak about it, I wish that we had the luxury to speak about it in some sort of nostalgic type sense or abstract type, you know, that was way back then in the 60s and how far we've come. But have we seen in case after case from the situation in New York, Sean Bell, and the case in Atlanta with sister Katherine Johnston, who was able to shoot 3 pigs before she was taken out. A case in which we coined as saying she was once, twice, three times a lady. We seeing that the state is sending us a continuous message that the counterinsurgency continues. In other words, the war on our movements and our leadership and our people in general continues. So the only logical response, the only civilized response is that the resistance got to continue. Thus far, I've received a lot of information and I've been inspired just being here. It's important to get updates about resistance that's going on all over, not just throughout the country, but throughout the world. I was just listening to the updates about what's happening with Six Nations. And it's a charge. I'm gonna paraphrase the old saying, how they say, steel shopping, men shopping men, but people, men and women, shopping men and women. So I'm saying it to say that it's good for forces to be able to touch down, and we have to, you know, express out the war stories and, you know, our mistakes, you know what I'm saying, setbacks, so on and so forth. Also, the resistance that's being moved forward, because the state will never tell you about the resistance that's going down. You know, I recall, I think it was 92, and a lot of cats in Chicago were saying, there were no, what they call riots, we struggled with them to refer to as rebellions. There were no rebellions in Chicago at a certain time. And we had took them back to, there was the order that came down from Daley, who is the mayor of Chicago, we refer to Gangster Daley. He had specifically told the media, do not report any of the riots. And this is done because if you're on the south side of Chicago and you about the west side of Chicago is uprising, this, you know what I'm saying, it'll charge you up. So it's important that we touch bases with each other and provide these updates. Speaking of anniversaries, or that's kind of, I didn't even use that word, but dates that we coming around with. Again, December 4th, yesterday marked the 37th year of the chairman friend, the Fiscal of Mark Clark being assassinated. December 9th will mark the 25th year of Mumia Abu-Jamal being snatched up and held captive. Also, I think it's December 13th, March, 1 year after the street legend, Brother Stanley Tookie Williams, executed by the state of California. With the POCC, we got a slogan, we say, free them all. And with these, just these dates alone, the state is steady sending us a message. They're trying to kill us all in one way or another, whether it be through via police terrorism, miseducation, different forms of chemical, biological warfare with AIDS, crack, heroin, you name it. And we have to come to grips with that. We have no other choice, no other option but to struggle, but to resist. And we have to approach from a realistic point of view that everyone is not going to be a frontline freedom fighter, but there are no neutral positions in this war, that everyone comes to some points of unity with the struggle at different times. I know a lot of times I talk to different forces and they tell, man, the 60s was doing this and that. And I say, well, don't be very clear. Don't look at the 60s some sort of romanticism, abstract type of way. Be very clear that people get involved in struggle or work one of three ways: inspiration, aspiration, or desperation. And as the comrades point out, a lot of times these desperate times are good. It's needed. It's a necessary ingredient. You know, I got the slogan we use. We use also. Heat turns more than meat black. Heat turns more than meat black. And that means there's a lot of cats on the street I tried to rap with and talk to, tell me, well, Chairman, I'm really not into that political stuff, you know. But I seen them in places like Stateville, which we call Deathville, with 75-year sentences. All of a sudden, they became very interested in discussion with Chairman. Talk to me about what you were saying about the police, terrorism, so on and so forth. Kobe Bryant started quoting Dr. King when he caught that case. Michael Jackson's song initially said, they don't care about, don't make a difference if you black or white. When he caught the case, the tune changed, so they don't care about us. So I'm saying to say, a lot of times these brutal conditions are necessary, you know what I'm saying, to bring that heat on so, you know, so cats to come to conclusion. We have to be consistent with our position out there on a day-to-day basis. We clear that we cannot afford the luxury just to pop up around election time or Black History Month, you know what I'm saying, just start saying politically correct things. We have to tie this in with our everyday discussions, you know what I'm saying, again, what Chairman Fred said, everything is political. And we're not talking about no plantation politics, no Democrat and Republicans. We're talking about words, terms, fashion. Everything is political. You know what I'm saying? And we have to tie this into, I'm not saying we have to be some sort of engaging dogma, you know what I'm saying, just, you know, like bombarding people, but just tie it in. We have a thing we call a code of culture. We hold artists and, you know, artists accountable. We say it's too many of us in Sing Sing for cats just be talking about some bling bling. So, you know what I'm saying? So we win them some point of unity and we get them place to land. We say they ain't got to be no Reverend Nat Turner's, but they got to come to church. They ain't got to be no Harriet Tubman's, but they got to do some singing. Everybody got to play some point of unity with the struggle. We seen this in the 60s where the movement forced cats like James Brown to say, I'm black and I'm proud. This comedian named Nipsey Russell used to make a joke about, I ain't up for giving no money to nobody for no guns, but he would drop an envelope under the door to the Black Panther Party office for the free breakfast program donation. So we had to have a place to land for everybody has some point of unity with the struggle. There's a difference between the revolution and the war. War, you get your two occupying armies and you get out to get down. Revolution, we've seen in Vietnam, we've seen the Black Power movement in the 60s. You gain a mass and participation of the masses of people, everybody, some point of unity. In Vietnam, they even had the bees playing a role. They had trained the bees to come out of the bamboo sticks at a certain time, where the American soldiers didn't know if it was the bees or the Viet Cong getting down with them. So again, there are no neutral positions in this struggle. Power to the people.
Some of you were here, well, over at Roxbury Community College back in February of this year when several former members of the Black Panther Party came to you and spoke about their experience with grand jury resistance. Could I see the hands of the people who were at that event? Okay, thank you. For those of you who weren't here, I'll give you a quick backdrop so that you can catch up to speed with those people who were there, and then I'm going to move forward. Back in 1973, 13 alleged members of the Black Panther Party were captured in New Orleans, and three of those members, Reuben Scott, John Bowman, and Harold Taylor, were separated, put in segregation, and then tortured over the period of 4 to 5 days tortured in ways very similar to what you hear about Guantanamo Bay and Abu Ghraib today. And confessions were taken from them as a result of that torture, confessions that were ultimately thrown out by two different judges in California, and those judges deemed that those statements taken from them should never be able to be used to prosecute them at any point in the future. Now, I tell you this because you have to understand history in order to understand where we are today. One of those men that I mentioned, remember I said Harold Taylor? Well, one of the very significant things about Harold Taylor is some years before he was captured in 1973 in New Orleans, he had been the key piece or key link of information that ultimately resulted in the freedom of Geronimo Pratt. Okay? He is the one that finally that came forward after lengthy investigation and was able to give the information that was key to ultimately Geronimo's freedom. So you know he was not very popular with the FBI, right? Okay. So that's what happened to those men in 1973. And what the government was investigating back in 73 was an ambush of a police station in 1971 where one officer died and one civilian clerk was injured. Excuse me. From the moment that that happened in San Francisco, the cops always believed that members of the Black Liberation Army and the Black Panther Party had been responsible for it, but they were never able to prove it. Okay, so in 1973, they're tortured. By 75, 76, judges have basically suppressed their confessions and said that they can never be used. Now, fast forward to 2003. And in 2003, some of the detectives who had participated in that torture, specifically Frank McCoy and Ed Ertelatz from the San Francisco Police Department, who had been in retirement, were deputized and became Homeland Security special agents, and they reopened the case and started roaming around the country with millions of dollars provided by John Ashcroft when he was Attorney General, and they started revisiting these brothers who had been tortured back in 1973 and dozens of other former members of the Black Panther Party and dozens of other members of the Weather Underground, investigating allegedly the Ingleside incident and some other incidents that had happened in San Francisco back in the 1970s. One after another grand jury was convened in the San Francisco Bay Area from 2003 to 2006. We've counted at least four or five grand juries. So far, none of them, no grand jury, has issued an indictment. Okay? But what happens is these brothers and others have been subpoenaed before the grand juries, and they've all refused to cooperate with the grand jury. And last fall, several of them, five of them in specific, refused, were held in contempt, and they were incarcerated. Those men were Richard Brown, Hank Jones, who's 72 years old, Ray Boudreaux, who's a grandfather, Harold Taylor, and John Bowman. They stayed incarcerated until October 31st of 2005, and then they were freed. After they were released, they decided they're not going to remain quiet about what had happened to them and their legacy of work with the Black Panther Party back in the 70s, and they came together and formed an organization called the Committee for the Defense of Human Rights. And they joined up with the Center for Constitutional Rights based in New York, who had been doing a lot of work around Guantanamo and Abu Ghraib, and they put together a roadshow and went around the country, and that's what some of you saw back in February of 2006. After that, after we left you all in February 2006, McCoy and Ertelatz laid low for a little while, but then they came back out from under that rock that they had been hiding under. And what we had happened was back in this past summer was all of a sudden all of these brothers and a few others were snatched up off the street and served with search warrants for DNA samples, and told that if they didn't provide the DNA samples that they were going to be hauled into court and locked up and held in contempt again. So they gave the, it was saliva samples that they were required to provide. So they gave those saliva samples, and again, things got quiet. Then the lead attorney general who had been working on this case, state attorney general out of California named Drew Leiter, showed up in civilian clothes at the offices of the Freedom Archives a couple of months ago, like, in his civvies. And so fortunately, one of our committee members who works at Freedom Archives recognized him and said, a pig is a pig is a pig. I always recognize a pig. I may not know his name, but I know, he smells the same, walks the same, right? Right. And what Drew Leiter wanted was he wanted to buy some of the tapes that Freedom Archives had of recordings of various political prisoners. Now, those couldn't have been Christmas gifts, right? All right, so we started, putting our heads together saying something's up, something's up. Okay. Then in June of 2000, of this year, we learned that John Bowman, one of the brothers who was here, who had been tortured, was diagnosed with stage 4 liver cancer, having had no prior notice that he was even sick. And the doctors gave him 2 to 6 months to live. I just came back from visiting John a couple of days ago. I can't tell you that 2 months from now he's still going to be with us. And the poem that Tania read earlier was homage to John Bowman. John's has sent a message, and his message is, don't ever give up the fight, okay? As long as there's a breath left in your body, you must use it to resist and to fight for the liberation and freedom of our people, okay? When I saw John, he was unrecognizable. Yes. The person that you all saw back in February 2006, you would have no idea this was the same person, okay? But despite this debilitating disease and the inevitability that he's not going to be with us much longer, he is planning to come to San Francisco at the end of January, where we're going to do a major event, because the Committee for the Defense of Human Rights put its money where its mouth was and did this DVD so that we can spread it around the world, the story of the torture of what happened to these brothers, so that this country and those pigs and anybody else who engages in the same kind of conduct and those guys who murdered Fred Hampton Jr.'s father, they will never be able to hide. Okay? We're going to the World Social Forum. Next month, the World Social Forum is going to be held in Kenya, and this is going to get played. Okay?
Right. Right. Okay.
We put together a brochure about the torture that happened to them. I'm going to pass this around. I'm going to ask you all, I love plagiarism. Copy it, spread it around, tell everybody, okay? Because as long as we keep spreading the word, the oppressors cannot win. It's when we remain silent that they win. I had the honor of meeting the members of the Ohio 7 and Tommy Manning back in the early 80s in Metropolitan Correctional Center. I was most impressed with their willingness to stand up and fight, and they obviously could have been doing something else. White skin privilege takes you far in this country. Sorry, Kazi. And they decided they weren't.
Hey, I know. Okay. I know where I'm at. Okay.
But they decided they were not going to fall victim to that, and they were going to fight and put their actions where their mouths were. So I have the deepest respect, and I'm very honored to be able to come here today and to share the solidarity. I'm not going to go any further. I think our brother told us much earlier, be brief and be gone. So it's time for me to be gone. Thank you.
All right, we had some other people who were supposed to be here tonight. Robin read a statement from the sister from Sioux Nations, Six Nations. And I have something, because Ramona Africa was supposed to be here, and I talked with them. They just got back from France yesterday, so they couldn't make it. So I talked with them on the phone. They gave me a little update for y'all about MOVE. What's happening there with Mumia and MOVE and whatnot, there's a lot of violence and stuff going down in the streets. People are getting killed. Someone that was a friend of Mumia's son got shot about 3 weeks ago, and the body was moved. People saw him, the cops go around the corner, and they was like, they came up, and the guy was looking for a parking space. He got the parking space, and then when he got out of the car, the other cops come out of the car talking about freeze. He threw his hands up, and they said, oh, he's got a gun, and just open up on him. And so then they moved the body to another block and said it was a drug bust gone bad, similar to the stuff down in Atlanta with the 88-year-old grandmother. But what else is happening there was a delegation, a right-wingers delegation headed by this guy named Wears. He's the head of the 59th Republican Ward in Philadelphia. He contacted a lawyer named Collard in France, and this lawyer defended some people who were torture victims. And they wanted to bring charges against the mayors and stuff in France because St. Denis had named that street after Mumia. So they were taking a delegation the Philadelphia chief of police who was a black person, a city councilwoman who was black, the president of the city council, and a Republican city councilman who said that he wanted to see Mumia fry. They were going over to France to ask them to take down the street name of Mumia Abu-Jamal that they named, and they were asking them to take back the award that they gave him for citizenship in France. So they were supposed to go over there the 27th to the 1st. This delegation was going to go over there. So we talked with Ramon and Pam and said, you know, y'all need to go over there and confront that. So they went over, and the people didn't show up. But they did meet with with a delegation of the mayors, and they confirmed that they would not take down the street sign, and they would not take back the award that they gave them. And the other thing that's happening there is Move 9 are coming up for parole in 2 years. And once it was announced that they were coming up for parole and people were going to start mobilizing to get them out, the city of Philadelphia gave the pigs that beat them down in 78, they gave them an award. You know, just recently, like about a month ago, they gave them an award. So, I mean, it speaks to some of the same stuff. I mean, like, they waited 30 years to get these pigs awards for that, right, because of these people starting to come out. They're coming up for parole. You know, it's like they continue to track us and continue to try and break people that they know are not broken. You know, people that are standing up, they'll try and track you down for 30, 40 years. It don't matter. They're going to look for you and try and break you. If they didn't break you inside, they're going to try and get you outside. And, you know, it's something, you know, like people like here with Jericho Boston has this martial arts class, which Brother Nassim, he's a sensei of it. And we've been doing this class for a little over a year now, you know, and I'm just wondering, you know, like a lot of people started out in the class, but it's something, you know, it's hard. It don't come easy, you know what I mean? Working out and sweating is hard. You know, anything good that we're gonna get in the struggle is hard. And you can't give up just because it's hard, you know? Them pigs out there got big necks and they be breaking people up. And if you're gonna like be in the struggle, you better know how to take care of yourself, you know? You better know how to take care of yourself. So, I mean, we got this class running. I know it's hard, but, you know, you just got to get down and do it, peoples. There's, you know, or they're just going to continue to walk over you, keep you in fear, from standing up, you know? I want to get to the discussion part, you know, so.
I want to share something, another thing.
Yeah.
You know, I forgot to share one other thing. One of the things that I learned when I was visiting John over the weekend was that his lawyer in Oklahoma got a phone call out of the blue from that same pig, Drew Liner, the state attorney general from California, calling up and says, Mr. Parr, are you still the lawyer for John Bowman? He says, yes, I am. Who is this? He says, well, this is David Drew Liner. He said, well, what do you want? He says, well, you know, I heard that Mr. Bowman was kind of sick. So I was thinking that maybe he'd want to come in and talk to us now.
Stop.
Well, fortunately, attorney Doug Parr suggested that Drew Liner do something that would be biologically challenging and hung up. But, you know, it just really highlights what Cosby was saying about they never give up. They never stop, all right? Here this man is literally on his deathbed, and this pig would suggest that he would come in and turn state's evidence against his comrades and himself.